I chair the committee, and with us, we have Representatives Guttenberg, Samuels, McGuire, and myself. We're expecting a couple more members here momentarily. We've also been joined by Representative Olson. Thank you very much, sir, for being a part and for your interest here. My staff aide of Oil and Gas, Reese Millip, joins us. We're here to hear one piece of legislation, which is House Bill 294 by Representative Chenault, who can't be here due to family concerns. And in his stead, we've got his staff aide, Sue Wright. So thank you for joining us, Sue. I'd like to have you present the legislation. We'll go into a public hearing following that, and then consideration by the committee. So with that, good to have you here, and thanks for your presentation.
Thank you for being here this evening. My name is Sue Wright, for the record. HB 294 is an act that amends and extends the Exploration and Development Incentive Tax Credit that was originally enacted with the 23rd Legislature in 2003 as HB 61. This tax credit continues to apply under the Alaska Net Income Tax Act for operators and working interest owners directly engaged in the exploration for and development of natural gas, primarily in the Cook Inlet area. Annual natural gas production and supply in the Cook Inlet area has been declining for a number of years. During the same time, demand has been increasing steadily. Therefore, a sharp increase in drilling to find new reserves is drastically needed. The original investment tax credit enacted in 2003, while modestly successful in stimulating new drilling and development, needs to be made a much more effective incentive to developers to increase capital spending in a large manner. These changes will go a long way to achieving that goal. It will also increase employment in each and every district for the legislators that are appearing and sitting here. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to John Barnes and Doug Berwachter, who are online, I believe, and have statements and are prepared to answer questions.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Good
Thank
to have
you.
You here. Okay, we'll test our online system, see if we're working. Mr. Barnes and Mr. Therwechter, are you online? Can you hear us?
Yes, this is John Barnes. I'm here.
Excellent. And Mr. Therwechter, are you there too?
Yes, sir, Mr. Okay. Chairman, I am here.
And I know that, Mr. Therwechter, you're there just to answer any questions if need be, and the presentation will be by Mr. Barnes. So, Mr. Barnes, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Good evening. My name is John Barnes, and I'm the manager for Marathon Oil Company's Alaska business. Before I begin, I'd like to just extend the appreciation of Marathon for this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 294. By way of background, Marathon Oil Company's Alaskan operations are focused on the Cook Inlet natural gas business. Last year, we produced and sold about 68 billion cubic feet of natural gas, and during that year, we sold to essentially every natural gas market that was available. These markets include the NSTAR and Chugach electric local utilities, and it also includes providing natural gas to the LNG plant located in Nikiski, sales to Tesoro, as well as Agrium. Marathon is committed to the Cook Inlet natural gas market, which obviously includes serving our long-term contractual commitments to the local utilities, as well as other available opportunities. As Ms. Wright mentioned, in 2003, the legislature passed and the governor signed several bills that were directed at providing incentives for new exploration and development activities. Marathon was particularly interested in House Bill 61, which was intended to incentivize exploration and development of natural gas reserves, specifically in the Cook Inlet. And as mentioned, the bill under consideration by this committee, that being House Bill 294, will strengthen these incentives. One might ask about the need to incentivize natural gas development in the Cook Inlet. The answer to this question is found by considering the long-term decline in natural gas reserves, which the Cook Inlet has experienced. What must be addressed is whether there's currently sufficient exploration activity to arrest this decline in reserves, and not simply to ask whether the Cook Inlet is running out of gas. At the current minimal level of Cook Inlet exploration, it's unlikely that Cook Inlet reserve additions will replace annual production on an ongoing basis. As such, natural gas reserves are at risk for continual decline in the Cook Inlet. The net result of not addressing this issue will be the loss of industries and associated jobs. lack of Cook Inlet exploration is an artifact of the historic oversupply of natural gas, which kept prices well below lower 48 prices, which created a lack of incentive for drilling. Furthermore, regulatory and permitting hurdles in Alaska has played a role in reducing project economics due to uncertainties in predictably bringing projects online within budget and on time. There is, however, good news. Recently, the U.S. Department of Energy completed a report which identified significant potential in the Cook Inlet for additional gas through infield reserve growth, new discoveries, and from other gas sources. The same report identifies the need for significant capital expenditures to bring this gas to market. The report identifies an expenditure of $500 million would be associated with finding and developing infield reserve growth of 1.4 trillion cubic feet. Excuse me, I'm fighting a cold here. An expenditure of $5 to $6 billion was associated with exploration and development of 6 to 8.5 trillion cubic feet of resource. These targets represent a significant opportunity to reinvigorate the Cook Inlet natural gas industry. The net result of development of these reserves would be additional jobs, ongoing industrial use of natural gas, as well as associated revenue increases to the state of Alaska through tax and royalties. So how will House Bill 294 help? It's unfortunate, but Alaskan projects are not considered solely on their absolute economic merit. For companies, they're scrutinized on a relative scale in comparison to other opportunities where around the world where people can invest. The intent of House Bill 294 is to level the playing field between Alaskan projects and other opportunities around the world. House Bill 294 is intended to provide an incentive to oil and gas development through activities through an investment tax credit. Most importantly, under this bill, the percentage of qualified expenditures that could be applied as a credit to offset future tax liabilities is increased from 10 to 25%. I'd like to add that timing is very important on Cook Inlet development. It currently takes in excess of 3 years to bring any potential Cook Inlet discovery on production. If a sufficiently high level of exploration activity can be stimulated, there's an increased probability that some discoveries may be brought to market sooner, which ultimately will benefit industries and consumers. In summary, Marathon Oil believes House Bill 294 can serve as a stimulus to enhance Cook Inlet exploration and development activities. Thank you for your time, and I can answer questions.
Thanks, Mr. Barnes. Appreciate the testimony. Any questions from the committee? Wanted to ask you, it seems to me the legislation that we passed in 2003 benefited the industry, including your company, and I just wonder what the justification is for generously increasing the tax credits as well as placing that or taking out the 50% limitation. Why would that be needed in light of the fact that the bill has been successful or the current law?
I think that probably the key word is the bill has been moderately successful.
Okay.
But if you look at the overall level of activity in the Cook Inlet, I don't believe that it's drawn the type of exploration that would ultimately benefit the state of Alaska. And again, the other thing to consider is the multiplier effect. If, nominally speaking, a company receives $1 million in tax credit for talking purposes, what that implies is that they've spent $10 million in the state of Alaska, ultimately finding and developing natural gas. Then you would also have to think about, for that development cost, what would the ultimate revenue to the state of Alaska be? Obviously, that's dependent on oil price, but through severance tax, royalty, ad valorem tax, the multiplier benefit to the state of Alaska is probably on the order of the investment that the company makes. I think that's something that economists, Department of Revenue could look at. It's, every company has proprietary information. But again, the key point is for every dollar of credit, $10 was spent in Alaska in doing an important contribution to Alaska business.
And, of course, there's been the monies in the state treasury that we've generated from this, too. My understanding is about $1.5 million. And for every dollar that we get in our treasury, the industry is spending about 10 times that. So there's monies that are being circulated through our economy, too. So there certainly has been a benefit from this legislation that was passed back in 03. I just want to make sure that we don't go too far in terms of extending a real generous provisions here. So I just wanted to make sure that we understood the reasoning for this and you're able to adequately justify it.
So I understand that the state will obviously need to find that appropriate balance between how much stimulus they believe is required to increase activity.
Yes, thank you. We have a question from Representative McGuire.
Yeah, Mr. Barnes, I appreciate the chairman's question because that was my question, too. We just dealt with a bill in Rules Committee by Senator Stedman that the goal behind it is to incentivize development in new salmon processing equipment. And the debate in that committee took a similar track, and in the end what we decided to do was to give up to a 50% deduction off the raw fish tax and to allow it to extend out for 3 years only, but to sort of incentivize any of these new capital investments. And so I guess I'll just put out there, I am leery of eliminating the 50% requirement entirely, because I think it strikes a good balance in saying that we recognize that there ought to be development, we want to spur that, we want to reward that, but that there ought to be some revenue that comes back to the state. And so I'm comfortable with the 50-50 split. That's number one. And number two, this bill is even more generous, the bill that was passed before House Bill 61 and allowing 5 years. So really the tool is quite expansive, because you could even make all of your capital improvements in 1 year and not the next or the next and still be the beneficiary of quite an incentive. And then I guess the final note that I'm throwing out there that it would take a lot of convincing for me sitting here today to eliminate the very generous incentive that we have. And then the final concern I have is extending it out to 2024. To me, I don't see any justification for that. And especially what we're realizing today, a lot of the decisions we made about ELF, we made in a vacuum. And just looking in 10 years' time, the dramatic change that we have seen in oil prices, as an example, caused this legislature to look back and say, well, maybe that wasn't so smart. And so to think about here, sitting here in 2006, the bill said 2017 before, that's 11 years from now. That's even a long period of time. But then to extend it out to 2024, I'm really uncomfortable with that, because I think that you need that periodic checkpoint to come back and look at things and see whether or not maybe the Cook Inlet is very developed by that point. Maybe the bill has worked and we've truly incentivized the industry and it's not necessary. So I guess I don't really have a question. I'm just throwing that out there to let you know. I appreciate your response to the chairman. And maybe you could touch on the one point that you didn't, which is why you would need the incentive to go out to 2024.
Well, again, I think that the timing of it, I guess I would offer two points. One is if the tool works, clearly you want to try to get to a point where you have an ongoing spin profile in the Cook Inlet. So I think 2020, 2024, we were just trying to look as the thing was kicked around to try to provide, frankly, a very, very stable picture of a reward that could be there for ongoing investment. So I really can't say that one time frame versus another is more appropriate. What I can say, though, is that, again, it does take quite a bit of time to try to get a field on production and producing. What I expect will happen in the Cook Inlet, frankly, is that you'll find a period of time where if you can even replace 1 year's production through a drilling program, that would be a great accomplishment, but it would be very capital intensive. Right now, the Cook Inlet burns between 150 to 200 billion cubic feet of gas per year. And if you could find and replace reserves at a dollar, an MCF, that would imply that you have a $200 million a year capital program going on in the Cook Inlet. And to keep that level of activity going, you have to create an environment that draws that capital in. How long will it go? I don't know. I think that one other thought was trying to envision when might a spur line or some other gas line be coming down. Because if there was a line, then maybe the need for Cook Inlet activity would not be as great. So that was really the intent of a longer period of time, was to try to bridge. But again, I don't know when a spur line will come on. I don't know if the Cook Inlet will ever achieve that degree of sustainable activity that's really required. That's a lot of rambling and probably not a clear answer, because we're trying to read tea leaves here, frankly.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering who else was online.
We've got Doug Therwechter in Houston, Texas, representing Marathon Oil.
Thank you.
And also, supposedly, and we'll confirm this momentarily, Mark Graber from the Department of Revenue. Mr. Graber, are you online? Mark Graber from Department of Revenue? He was supposed to have been online to...
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, excellent. Well, stand by, sir. We're going to get to you in just a moment here, okay? We were just confirming if you were there or not.
Yes.
Other than that, I believe that's it, except for perhaps some public testimony here in Juneau. Are there any more... did you have any more questions at this point?
No, just some comments related. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead and offer your comments now if you'd like.
Sure, Mr. Chair. You know, the extending out, as Representative McGuire was saying, of the date from 11 years, just so much farther out. You know, the market, other market factors that seem to be possibly pushing this are, you know, Nana Basin being explored, mm-hmm. or gas line coming down from the North Slope seem to be pretty strong motivations for people to hold their powder. You know, as far as what they're doing, I mean, the tax credit would up to 100% would allow them to do development and exploration and really not risk anything. And then you've got to say what is coming back from the state when there's a well sitting out in Cook Inlet or someplace, and there's the markets for that, or even 50 years down the road, whether or not it's going to come back. So I don't, mm-hmm. I think those are things that need to be explored.
All right, thank you.
It's actually driving not just this train, but other things for other exploration. Okay. And those big guys are sitting in the back, you know, waiting to see what happens with them.
Okay, good observation. Thank you. Representative Samuels.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for Mr. Therwechter.
Mm-hmm.
In Houston. Do you have examples of, I agree with you that you have to look at the global competition for your capital dollars, but the tax and royalty systems in other parts of the world that Marathon does business in, do you have examples of how that they set up a tax and royalty, or do they have production sharing contracts or whatnot? So who our competition is? Where else do you do business?
Well, this is Barnes. I'll try to answer that. Contracts, commercial terms, frankly, are all over the world. I think are all over the paper on terms. You're right, there's production sharing agreements, there's and those typically come in where you have a higher probability of your resource base. There's typical tax, severance tax, royalty type approaches. The U.S. government has had royalty reduction to try to stimulate deep water exploration. So there's many tools out there that can be used. I do know that I believe that in the state of Oklahoma, that it's my understanding that they actually try to put in some incentives as well. As far as I know, Alaska, at least in this regard, might be one of the few states that have tried this tool as an incentive. Other industries have tried it, though, not related to oil and gas.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, unless there's further questions for Mr. Barnes, we'll move on to the testimony of Mark Graber of the State Department of Revenue. Mr. Graber.
Mr. Chairman, I'm available for questions. I have no testimony.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Any other off-net locations where people are hoping to testify on the House Bill 294? Anywhere else in the state? Do we have any further testimony online? Okay. My understanding is that there is somebody from Anchorage. Sir or ma'am, are you able to hear us? We don't have your name, but I understand there is somebody that wishes to testify out of Anchorage. Are you there? Okay.
I can hear, sir.
Okay.
For the record.
Good. We could barely hear you at first. If you could perhaps get a little closer to the mic, that would be helpful.
For the record, my name is Jerry McCutcheon.
Okay. Hello, Jerry. Go ahead.
This bill reminds me of a bill about 20 years ago, and the guy who was fawning all over the oil industry trying to curry favor kept trying to press this guy, oil man, that his bill would produce more oil, etc. Finally looked and said, Senator, we don't drill for tax breaks, we drill for oil. This bill won't accomplish much. If you really want something, and I would assume that somebody from the Kenai Peninsula would really want gas production, then the way to get it is start taxing the leases that have never seen a seismic work, let alone a drill bit, and make it to the point they're either going to drill it or they're going to give it up and somebody else can drill it. You got too much land out there and already being held, and nobody's doing anything with it, and they're just sitting on it. You're going to have to tax the leases and jack the taxes up until it's drill it or lose it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jerry, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions on the committee for Mr. McCutcheon? I'd like to go back to previous testifier here, Mark. Actually, you didn't testify, Mark, but we do actually have some questions for you, Mark Graber from Department of Revenue. I've got one, but I'd like to defer my question. Hold my question until we hear from Representative Samuels and his question. So, Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question on page 2 of the bills on both line 5 and line 11. There's the 25% for qualified services in the state. I just need an explanation of exactly what that is. Is this an operating tax credit also?
Is that a question for me? This is Mark Graber.
Yes,
it was.
No, from my understanding, it's for capital expenditures only. So operating expenditures wouldn't qualify?
Okay, then the follow-up, Mr. Chairman. The law currently reads 10% of the annual costs incurred by the taxpayer for qualified services in the state during each tax year for which the credit is allowable for a qualified capital investment. What's a qualified service?
Good question.
We have not had I can't answer that question precisely. We have not performed any audits on the credits that have been claimed. But my understanding is that is for seismic work and the types of things that eventually will get capitalized. So excuse me, give me a second to review the bill. It talks about qualified capital investment, and then for qualified services in the state, I believe those qualified services are the types of things that eventually get capitalized, as opposed to capital assets that are purchased.
Okay. There was a, the only reason I asked is there on page 3, there's a definition of the qualified capital investment, but there wasn't for a qualified service, so that's why I was wanting to know. Thank you.
Just a follow-up. Is there a definition of qualified service in statute? That's what the question was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was
knowledgeable of that. Is that correct, Mr. Graber, that you're not aware of what, quote, qualified service, unquote, means?
Not precisely. Like I say, the first credit showed up in 2004, and we really haven't had time to audit it yet.
Okay. Well, if that's something you can provide for us and identify that statute, if we can't find that, that would be very helpful.
Sure, I'll be glad to.
That parlays into my question, sir. This is Coring, Chair, and that would be since this bill was enacted into law back in 2003, I guess it was, can you tell us how many times this credit has actually been taken advantage of, and which companies, if you're familiar with that, other than Marathon? Did you hear that one okay?
I'm sorry.
Did you hear that question okay?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. Could you repeat it, Mr. Chairman?
I would like to ask you if you have knowledge of. If you don't, then we can get that later. But if you have knowledge as to how many times since this bill was enacted in 2003, the credit has been used, and perhaps if you can recollect which companies those are, in addition to Marathon, that would be of interest.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to dodge that. I know there's two companies that have taken the credit.
Okay.
And I'm just not sure if I'm going to get into a disclosure problem.
Okay. If it's a legal issue you're uncomfortable with, that's all right. We understand. But does it appear like it's been an effective bill in terms of companies having interest in it and taking advantage of it?
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't answer that question.
Okay. What I'd like to do then is to ask again if there's anybody online that wishes to testify.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? This is Doug Thierwichter. I tried to answer, I think it was Representative Gardner's question, but they had me on mute.
Okay. Well, Gardner is not here, so it was either Ralph Samuels or Representative Guttenberg that asked it. So, but go ahead. Whatever the question was and your answer, go ahead.
Well, I need to hear the question again.
Okay.
Maybe
any volunteers? Let's see. Lisa McGuire was here. She asked the question. I don't recall what that was. She's not here to repeat that question, so I think we're at a loss at this point.
Okay. Somebody directed a question to me, and I wanted to answer, and I was trying to answer it, but I was on mute. So.
Okay. I'll launch into another question here myself. Before that, I just wanted to make a point and an observation. I think the direction we're going with this bill, with all due respect to the sponsor, is such that we might have to hold the bill for a while and do a little bit of work to it to make it a little more amenable to address some of the concerns. I want to say, though, as Chair, I do support the concept of the bill, and I think if there's things that we can do to accelerate more development, particularly on the Kenai Peninsula, which really needs the gas, obviously, I'm definitely for that. I think House Bill 61 really helped with that, and if we can tweak that law and really get more companies and more investment, that's great. I think Marathon has demonstrated a real interest in that bill. They've taken advantage of it, and like I said earlier, we've returned basically a 10-to-1 investment on the money that's been spent. And if we can increase that, that would be great. So I just wanted to note for the sponsor of the bill that I think you've got a good idea and a good concept, but we're probably going to have to tweak it to address the concerns of McGuire and others who've noted their concerns.
Very good.
With that being said, I'd like to go into another concern of mine that might result in having to add a little provision in this bill here, if necessary, and we can have Ledge Legal make that determination for us ultimately, but that's the issue of the potential gas line and spurs and any gas-related infrastructure that I want to make sure is not a part of this provision here, because we don't want to be giving away the farm and be too generous to companies that ultimately build that line here with these 25% provisions in here and eliminating the 50% provision too. So if we can narrow down the focus of the bill to include that, perhaps an extra section that addresses that. My suggested wording was something like, quote, the provisions of this act do not apply to costs and revenue associated with gas pipelines and infrastructure, unquote. Just a suggestion that we, I think, should explore. And maybe we can have Ledge Legal take a look at that and see if that's necessary to put in there. I spoke to the gentleman with Marathon, and they seemed amenable to that suggestion, if I understood correctly. And Mr. Barnes or Therwachter, you're willing to address that if you'd like. Any thoughts?
Barnes again. I guess what my initial thought would be, if there's a concern about issues regarding North Slope gas line or spur line, and again, we'll need a legal view on this. I'm not a lawyer or a tax guy, but the intent of this bill was for exploration and development of new gas south of the Brooks Range. So at a high level past, maybe they're excluded because any gas from the North Slope is produced north of the Brooks Range. But you're right, there may be a need to tweak and make certain there's not a gap there in the wording.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess what we'll do is perhaps, yes, Representative Samuels.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got more questions for Department of Revenue, actually.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
And one of them follows on exactly what you just asked, Mr. Chairman. Does, and it might be in the statute, that's just not in the changes that are in the bill. Does this specify geographical locations? I know the sponsor statement says that it does, but it, and that's south of the Brooks Range?
Yes, 68th parallel, 68th
okay.
Degrees north.
And the second question for the Department of Revenue then is, have you done any economic modeling to see how much would have to be spent and how much would have to be found to make it, I guess, worthwhile, not counting the impact on the economy, but the impact on the state treasury? How much are we giving up at what price of various price points of oil? Has revenue run any economics on those types of things? And okay. I'll withdraw the question. I got the answer. And I'll ask later. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Graber.
Mr. Graber.
Yes, I have a follow-up answer to the earlier question about qualified services.
Go ahead, sir.
I had a chance to review the bill here again. I believe that's addressed in at the very end of the bill in Section I. We define qualified services as expenditures for labor, seismic, and other services that are directly applicable to a qualified capital investment, and it does not include lease operating expenses.
Okay. Does that help any?
Yep.
Hey, before we bring this meeting to a conclusion here, I'd like to have Mr. Graber again, if you would, sir, to give your assessment here, or at least explanation of the fiscal note. Can you just address that for the benefit of the committee? And I assume you have it before you.
I do.
Okay.
The explanation essentially follows the sponsor statement that lays out the changes that are being made. First off, we set out what is not changed. Only exploration and development outlays for gas qualify for the credit as opposed to oil. The credit applies to the taxpayer's total income tax liability and would offset their income tax that's related to all their activity in the state. Unused credits may be carried forward to the subsequent 5 years, And once production of gas begins, additional outlays for the field cease to accrue credits. And the changes, there are four basic changes. As was stated earlier, the bill increases the credit to 25% of the qualified capital investment. That's up from 10%. And the credit may eliminate the total tax liability for a tax year, and that's increased from 50%. The credit is expanded to include dry hole costs. Currently, the bill is only applicable to successful wells that produce gas. And the life of the credit is extended to a repeal date of January 1st, 2020, and that's extended from January 1st, 2013. And in the 2 years since the enactment, we have seen claims of $6.3 million, and that relates to three fields. The rest of the fiscal note is essentially an economic analysis that I did not prepare. I understood we would have Sherry Nienhaus there in the audience from Department of Revenue, and she may want to comment on that. She is an economist with the Department of Revenue.
Okay. I didn't actually get her name. I see her in the audience, though. Ma'am, what would your name be?
And Sherry.
If you have any comments for us, we'd be happy to hear them.
Well,
for the record, again, your name is, ma'am?
Sherry Nienhaus.
Sherry Nienhaus, thank you.
Department of Revenue, yes.
Thank you, Sherry.
The three paragraphs that follow the 4 points on the beginning of the second page are some language left over from HB 61. From an economic standpoint, the price of gas is almost as much of an incentive as a tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all we're trying to say here is that as long as the price of gas remains high, that should be a good incentive as well as a tax credit.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Sherry? Okay. What I'd like to do is to, well, before I do that, let me ask if there's anybody here in Juneau that wishes to testify on the bill so I can wrap up the public hearing on this. Anybody? Mr. Thompson, you care to say anything? Wait for the next committee? Okay. Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing. And what I'd like to do is to hang on to this bill here so that we can address some of the concerns that were expressed here, namely the 50-50 split issue, the extension that was brought up by Representative McGuire, and we'd like to get a definition on exactly what qualified service means, and then also the concern that I had dealing with the gas-related infrastructure and how that may or may not affect this legislation. So this is, like I said before, a good concept, and I support the legislation. I think it needs a little more time before we can advance it. And not to say that we're going to hang on to it indefinitely. In fact, the plan is to bring it up again under bills previously heard on January 31st at our next oil and gas meeting, because we'd like to do what we can to expedite this if we can make necessary adjustments and build our support for the bill. So with that, I'll unless there's further comments or questions by committee members, I'd like to close this meeting at 5:45. Thank you.